The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast, and I am so excited. You're going to be hearing a lot of interviews with some of my favorite winemakers, wine owners from South Island, New Zealand. I visited North Island back in 2017. I've fallen in love with so many different Pinots from New Zealand, especially Central Otago. Join me now, and I have a story about her wine, but let's bring her on because it's rude. I haven't even done it. From one of my favorite wineries, I'm holding the bottle right now, Burn Cottage in Central Otago. The winemaker, the general manager for them, for Burn Cottage, it is Claire Mulholland. Claire, thank you so much for being on the pod today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to chat with you, but I'm going to race through a quick story about your wine. Many, many months ago, girlfriend and I watching a movie, I go and grab a bottle. I grabbed the wrong bottle. I thought I was grabbing just a simple, you know, $18 entry-level wine. It was dark. I pour it. Thank God I decanted it for a little bit. When we took our first sip, we both stopped and I paused the movie. And I don't mean to swear here, but I was like, holy shit, what are we drinking? And I immediately recognized I grabbed the wrong bottle. This is not a entry-level wine. And it was Burn Cottage. I knew nothing about you. I saw a bottle at the LCBO. I'm like, you know what? Love that region. Let's just grab it, throw it away, drink it one day. Immediately, I fell in love with your product. And there's no question, this is just a story. But just first, congratulations. You guys, I'm sure some people might know you for your cool label, but you make some killer Pinot.
Thank you. Yeah, it's very special sites, and particularly the original Burn Cottage vineyard. It's pretty unique. There's not really anything else like it. So yeah, that's the key, I think.
Well, let's start there then. We'll get into your journey in a wine, but what is it about the vineyards? We'll go small and work big. What is it about the vineyards that you work that just translates so well for making such well-made Pinot Noir?
Well, the home vineyard, or the original Burn Cottage vineyard, it's a amphitheater, basically, the shape of the site. And it's got 10 different blocks of different separate blocks over different soil types there. And each one also, because of the shape of the site, has different elevation, different aspect to the sun movement across it. Slightly, the different soils can be anything from clay, pockets of clay in one area to beautiful loams, silts, schist-derived silts, just beautiful silt loams, just beautiful soils, lovely, lovely site, and just that, all of the different clones we've got in there as well. We've got 10 different Pinot Noir clones, so that all of the things come together with just depth and complexity and real lovely texture and, yeah.
I'm going to go a little nerdy here. I realize mm-hmm. I don't talk a lot about clones, but what do people need to know? You have 10 different clones. You're playing with different things. Each one can bring something different to the nose or to the palate. What are some of the general things people need to know when it comes to you as a winemaker working with different clones?
I guess, firstly, in the vineyard, they are all slightly different. And then when the way they develop through to maturity, the different characteristics, some will be prettier, some will be sort of the backbone of the blend, some will be beautiful filling to the and texture. So we're able to bring in different things from different parts of the vineyard and have those layers from those different options. So it meant just a very interesting site layout for us at the start.
Do you have a favorite clone, or does it just depend on this clone works better with this soil and it's hard to pick one?
In the past, I've said that the Able clone is very versatile and that I really like that, whether it's a warm season or a cooler season, it just has some lovely sort of filling to it and bright and beautiful fruit character as well. But I would say it's just lovely to have the opportunity to be working with a number of them and for them to all bring different things to the blend. So yeah.
Let's go back to you, and I'm going to bounce back and forth. I want to know more, just more about your story, growing up on a farm. How much did that impact where you are today, since you were always around the world of agriculture?
I think for me, it did lead me first more through the viticulture. I wanted to be working on the, which I guess I still do, but I ended up moving through to the winery. But just that interest in growing and producing something special from a special place, and that was something that I guess that as well as also having really high quality produce at home was fine wool, and just that commitment to quality and just something really unique from our place. So yeah, that's where I started. I was also very interested. I've always been very interested in anything with soils, climate. I also did studies with water and everything. So it all sort of tied together for a direction into the vineyard to start off with.
And then how did you fall in love with wine?
I think just it always captured my imagination. It always was very interesting to me, and especially what New Zealand had done was what we were, more immediately exposed to as, as teenagers or as just when we started to sort of taste a little bit of wine. There was just some beautiful wines coming out of Martinborough, for example, and we certainly did see a reasonable amount from Australia at that stage as well. But I think just the translation of the place into something so unique, and Central Otago was just starting to really pique the interest of people overseas, and it was just starting to get noticed in competitions and in reviews, and it was just like, I guess Central Otago for a long time or initially was like, oh, well, it's too cold down there, people would say that you're right on the edge, it's too cold, it's a bit of a, you couldn't produce reds down there, things like that. So and then just the opposite thing coming through, all these beautiful wines, but well, these wines that were doing so well, and that was just right at the start. So yeah, that really got everyone excited.
Yeah, it's funny. We hear the same thing here in Niagara. You know, the temperature works perfectly. Slight sidetrack. How much pride do you take in how much attention is on Central Otago? And now, for at least people in the know, or at restaurants all over the world, you know, Central Otago is now known as, okay, that is a quality region for Pinot Noir. I'm wondering, I think you've been at Burnt Cottage since 08, and you know, New Zealand is in this, you know, far away from so much part of the world, and yet your wines are so well known.
Yeah, I think it's just been everything has come about from a lot of hard work, obviously, in the region, but also has progressed really. When I look back, I think it's actually happened so quickly on a world stage that we take a lot of pride in it. I think we're always saying we're always learning, we're always refining, we're always, our sites are young or our vineyards are young compared with a lot of the old world wines. So we're kind of have fast tracked in some ways our learning and have been really concentrating on what can we do, like how's this translating from the vineyard to the winery, how our viticulture has changed a lot, especially I would say in the late 90s, early 2000s, our viticulture was just more refined and continues to be so. So yeah, I think there's been a lot gone on in a short time.
What was life like for you, Claire, before Burn Cottage? I just want to hear more about your wine journey.
So yeah, I was lucky enough to be, and so I did quite a bit of time in the vineyards in the Gibson Valley, which was one of the cool is one of the slightly, I would say, slightly coolest, slightly higher rainfall areas in the region, but it produces beautiful wines. I was lucky enough to work there for some really great people, and then also to do overseas vintages starting around then, and then heading up to Martinborough. I spent 7 years up there for Martinborough Vineyard, working with Pinot Noir up there, which was really beautiful sights up there, great people, and just their journey of Pinot Noir was just slightly ahead of ours, so it was really good to work with some slightly older vines than ours at the time. And then came back down to Central Otago after that was, let's see, 2007, 2008. I started with Burn Cottage in 2010, so I was doing a few other bits, and Amersfield was one of them.
And what attracted you to Burn Cottage, the smaller vineyard?
Well, I'd been really probably right since I started, very interested in organic production and just reducing anything that I didn't think was necessary that was being done. And so I was pushing for organic production during my time at Martin, when I started at Martinborough Vineyard, which was, it's a bit of a process when companies have to are changing and doing that conversion. And so I then started learning about biodynamics. A good friend of mine sort of introduced me to a couple of books on it, and tasting some of the wines, I started to sort of really push for that. And so when I saw that Burn Cottage was, one, and it's really exciting site, and the people involved, Marcus and head Border and Ted Lemon, and also Peter Proctor, who was one of the leading teachers of biodynamic and practices of biodynamics in New Zealand. I just thought, well, that's pretty amazing. Right from the start, they're just putting themselves into that space and really committing themselves to the sort of production and the sort of situation that I think would produce great wine, but also be a great place to work in and perfect environment for the vineyard. So, yeah.
Okay, so just yeah, where they were doing their practices, all the biodynamic coincided with just your own ethos and your own wine philosophy.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, do you remember, and maybe you don't, it's a hard question to ask, but was there a moment when you realized, yeah, I want to devote my life to making wine?
I think I just was part, and maybe it was part and parcel of being in Central Otago during this time, and just being excited by what was possible and what has continued to be possible and continued to
Right.
be a really amazing industry to be part of.
So you sense the potential and the momentum, and you kind of wanted to be a part of this because you knew something special was happening.
And that was when Pinot Noir wasn't planted very widely initially. It was just sort of like, hey, this is something, we knew that Riesling and some of the whites were really in great soils that would produce great white wine down here. But just the Pinot Noir was just starting to really take off, and that was just the promise of that, and all of the new areas that we ended up, that the region ended up finding these beautiful microclimates in the subregions. So that was really cool also.
Going back over just to the world of the wine from you're from, I'm wondering, what are some of the biggest challenges that comes from growing grapes, from making wine in Central Otago? Every region has its issues, and unless you're in parts of California where it seems like the weather's always perfect. But what are some of the challenges that you face?
Yeah, probably our biggest challenge to start the season is always frost. And that's something that, frost watch, frost fighting, all of the forecasting and everything has got better and better over time, but it still requires a lot of close observation, and being, our vineyard manager Shane's out there really having a lot of sleepless nights at different times. So that probably frost is something that, one of our biggest challenges. But we do, I think the region does the frost fighting very well, and generally has very good results. The other thing would be wind. The wind here, New Zealand's windy, just island in the middle of a lot of different weather patterns down here. So we and you really don't know more than. Forecasting's hard here as well. They like 2 or 3 days out is about as good as it gets sometimes. But so Yeah, the wind can really be a challenge when you've got early growth stages. It can really batter them around, and even though we've got a nice an area that's quite sheltered, it will still come over the mountain. It'll still come over the hills and mountains to and into the valleys pretty strongly. And then in summer, when it's what we tend to get pretty warm days of up to, our peaks, our highest peak days will be in the 30s, and you can have a hot wind with that sometimes, which is not ideal either. But yeah, those are probably our main challenges. So, and we are, yeah, the hot days as well sometimes.
So a little bit of everything, really. Also,
Yeah.
that not being able to know 3 4 days, except for 3 4 days ahead. Oh, that's got to be a challenge,
Well,
especially. Yeah.
it's getting better all the time. Sometimes we can have a general idea of what's happening in over the 7 days, for example, 7 day forecast, but you often these something can move faster or
Right.
slower.
I always get nervous asking this because generalizations are dangerous for the wine world. The wine you make is going to be different from a winery that's 20 kilometers away, depending on, their slope and exposure. But I'm just wondering, for people getting into Pinot, how would you describe any sort of basic differences in style between what Central Otago is versus, say, Oregon or Burgundy? Like, just some of the, what would you would say some of the basic stylistic differences would be.
That is a bit of a tricky one,
Yeah.
given, I suppose, given that each region has a vineyard at different stages and obviously the different philosophies and different soils. I guess New Zealand, in general, New Zealand Pinot is quite, you can cellar it, especially from Central Otago and, some of the regions that have been going have that proven history of Pinot Noir. The cellaring, you can cellar well, but you can also have the approachability and the suppleness and the texture and everything quite early as well. So, I mean, in the past, people would say, oh, there's a lot of fruit chosen, a lot of bright fruits, a lot of vibrancy in New Zealand Pinot Noir, but I think there's also the texture and the depth there now and the cellaring. So, in terms of comparing that with other places, some wineries, especially in the ones you mentioned, might be making wines to be cellared a bit longer initially, or just may not be. I just think New Zealand or Central Otago Pinot Noir is very approachable and enjoyable and delicious, yeah, quite
Yeah, you know
early.
what?
So
I gotta take that question back. It's too big. It's too general. Like, I should. No,
that is quite pretty big.
I know. Because sometimes I just want to try to bring people in. Is it easier to try to describe what it's like Martinborough versus Central Otago, or is even that too? There's too much broad range. And I bring it up because I remember trying a delicious Pinot from Nelson that was 11 years old. Blinded, I would have said, this is Sonoma, slightly cool climate Sonoma. And so maybe, you know what?
And
How about
that,
this? Is there anything you can would say are differences between, say, Martinborough or Central Otago? And if not, we can go in a different direction.
yeah, that I get asked that a bit. There's it really is seasonal dependent as well, because it depends if what whether there's been warmer seasons and sometimes I think that Central Otago shows more of the savory and the beautiful fruit and lovely texture, whereas sometimes Martinborough, if they depending on their season, they can be they can have a lovely depth of fruit and richness of texture there as well. But you would see them as quite different. It is a tricky one
Yeah. Yeah. We'll go, you know
to
what?
encounter.
Let's go back to you. What did you learn? What was it like working at one very well-known producer in Burgundy, in Domaine du Jacques?
Yeah, I mean, brilliant vineyards, amazing people. They were so welcoming, and I went back there more than once to work. And just, I think people who were happy to also try different things and be open to different ideas with different seasons. They were always have always been very progressive, and big involvement with the family. Of all the family, and I think that was really a key thing that I enjoyed there as well. And also with the community, very much close with with others around. So, yeah, I just the fruit was amazing. A lot of the we were doing a lot of 100% whole cluster and things at the time, and it's just amazing the different fruit from those older vineyards. So.
How much better did it make you as a winemaker? And I was reading up, just you've been and traveled and worked in Burgundy or California or Oregon. Just how much does that make you a better winemaker?
Most of my peers here have all done a lot of that as well. I think it just gives you more perspective, more learning. I think you do have to appreciate, and I'm sure everyone else does as well, that how different every place is. So it's not like you take that for granted that the same thing would work at your place as what you've seen elsewhere. But it's interesting to think it keeps you, keeps you more, I guess, the learning journey, the questioning of different things, and often less is more.
What are the biggest misconceptions people have of winemakers? Where I'm sure you go on tours, you meet someone and they assume you're just walking in the vineyards, tasting grapes while a nice summer wind is in the distance.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of them, that it's that the work-life balance during harvest is, I have had someone say that to me before, that they just like the work-life balance, but during harvest it's not really, you're very busy. It's very intensive. So much can happen in a day during that time. So much can happen in just a few hours. So probably just the intensity of it at times, but then it can obviously, you do have the balance at different times of the year when you can go and do a vintage somewhere else, or do concentrate on a different side of things within the vineyard. Or yeah, it's just a different, maybe a little bit different than people realize. It's so much more like it, like harvest and agriculture and things as well. It's just there's definite peaks.
Do you have the word favorites, a dumb word, but I'll use it, a favorite tale of woe where you were in, maybe it was at Burn Cottage, maybe somewhere else. You've done all the work and it's time for harvest, and within a couple hours, hail happened or something. Like, do you have one of the stories where all the work you did and Mother Nature decided to really mess with your plans?
There's probably a few, but I can't, just straight off the bat, would probably put my mind to, we've started to get a little bit of changeable weather during our picking, which is not that common, but it will happen sometimes and a little bit more often than it used to. And so again, it's the forecasting story, but we were forecast, to get a certain amount of rain. I think it was, 12 mils or something. And so you stop everyone stop picking and let's just wait this out and then see how it looks and how long it needs to be back where we want it. And I think it was one of those situations where it just kept going and they had none of the forecasts were even close. And you sort of, when I say we stopped picking, we probably tried to get in as much as we could beforehand as well. But it's just one of those things. Mother Nature just, yeah.
And you wish you had a better forecast.
Yeah, well, normally that would probably just stick out as one time when it
Right.
was really off.
When it comes to the decision to pick, I'm always curious talking to winemakers about this. How much of it is science? How much of it is gut and heart, and just deciding when to pick? I'm always curious about all the different
Yeah.
factors that go into making such a critical decision.
Yeah, I guess there's all the factors, testing, tasting, walking, thinking about the season, thinking about what's already happened. And for me, I'm also looking at the vines a fair bit themselves as well as the fruit. And just, I think, just getting to know, or the history you have with the site, and you know what is likely to happen next in a lot of ways, or what could happen. So you're just sort of trying to balance all of those things. And for us, for example, we take over 2 weeks to pick our three vineyards. And so it's also like, okay, just really working between each one, trying to work out which is the best place for each part. So yeah, quite a lot goes into that around that time, yeah.
How are you feeling? How is your body the day after harvest is fully done? One of my jobs is I work in sports radio, and I'm always curious talking to NFL players, what's their body like on Monday after playing football on Sunday? So I'm curious, what's it like for you when harvest is finally done?
Well, I think it's probably different at every, it's different as things go along. But for me, it's more, there's still a lot to do for us because we do a part of our bottling of the previous year before harvest and part of it straight after harvest. So, yeah, I guess there's a bit of reprieve, but you're straight into, you pretty much know that you're on the track for the next thing anyway. But yeah, so it's not quite the same as, but the team that have come to help us are probably just really looking forward to getting out in the hills and getting out, enjoying a bit more of the region before they head through to home.
Do you get to sleep in a little bit the day after?
No. Well, with picking, of course, that's only just getting everything through to the winery. So yeah, it's a little bit different between the winery and the vineyard, but the vineyard will still be doing things like taking bird nets off and getting things organized, the mark and everything from the winery for compost, and there's different things. Lots still going on, I would say. Yeah.
By the way, I haven't even talked that much about Burn Cottage. What do people need to know about your portfolio and the philosophy of your wines?
Yeah, so we have always had that, all of our production, all of our work in the vineyard has been organic and biodynamic. And it's basically just these beautiful sites, the main one, or the home one, first one, which I talked about. And then there's two in the, so that's the Lowburn sub-region. And there's two in the Bannockburn sub-region, which is slightly south, but in a beautiful sort of warm area to the end of, to the south of the Cromwell Basin. Slightly different soils there too. And they were producing everything. Same philosophy across there. Natural ferments, we're trying to just really shepherd them through to just show the best character or the best representation of the sites. And yeah, just trying to give them as much, watching over them as much as possible, but not trying to do only what needs to be done. Everything, I think people would probably know if they know us that everything's hand-picked and everything, in the winery, it's all sort of hand plunging and a little bit of pump overs and things, but then and everything goes into oak barrique, and the wines are around the 12-month mark in the winery in the cellar.
Speaking of cellar, family members got me a couple of your bottles, and they had to travel all around Ontario, Canada, just to find these. The 2020 Burn Cottage Vineyard Pinot. How long can I put this away for? It's now 5 years old. How much longer
Yeah.
do you think I could throw this away for?
Well, we say 10 to 12 years easily, but I guess a lot of people are, really enjoying them between that 5 to 8 years. Like a lot of people in New Zealand would be doing that, but easily tw 10 to 12, yeah. And the 20, definitely.
Clara, as we end this, I really appreciate you taking the time. Anything else people need to know, either about Burn Cottage or traveling around, because I'm going to be coming and visiting you guys sometime in early March. Just anything else people need to know about the wines of Central Otago?
Oh no, they just have to get here and experience it and try them. And I think it's a very unique area. There's just so much happening in a small region. So many different microclimates, so many beautiful wines. There's always surprises for people, and they'll love it.
Well, Claire, I really appreciate you guys just make such good wine, and people need to know, listening, the reviews and just the accolades you guys get consistently year in and year out. Congratulations to the winery, and congratulations, Claire, for you and for your success and the part you played in all of this.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks everyone for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on iTunes, Apple, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.